Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Wednesday, August 18th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in today on Backyard Poultry, on Blog Talk Radio. Man, that's been a busy day. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. In fact, we're running a special now through Friday at midnight. Buy a t-shirt, you'll get a free Chicken Whisperer bumper sticker and a free Chicken Whisperer wristband. That's a $5 value you'll get for free with every t-shirt. Order t-shirts, get two bumper stickers and two wristbands. So we're running that special until Friday. You can get all that great Chicken Whisperer gear at chickenwhisperer.com. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I want to invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room. It's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button there at our homepage at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk about backyard poultry, show poultry, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. I'd also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today, and I want to thank you again for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust
when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for joining us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Wednesday. It's hump day. We're halfway through the week, and we're glad you're joining us today at 12 o'clock here on Blog Talk Radio. And we have a great show for you lined up today. It's third Wednesday of the month, which means it's the Living Garden with Jane Jensen. Jane's going to be joining us here about half past the hour. Today she's going to be teaching us all about harvesting time, when to harvest those vegetables. I have a hard time knowing when to harvest my corn. I always want to wait a little longer, get the ears a little bit bigger, and then the next thing you know, the squirrels get it or something else. So I just I'll be definitely tuning in. Make sure you have your pen and paper ready because you'll guarantee to write lots of great information down, because we're going to talk about all the different types of things you may have in your garden. How many times have you actually waited too long to pick your peas or your beans or your okra? That's another big thing. I always let my okra get a little bit too big. It gets too tough. So looking forward to today's show myself, when to harvest. So it is now time to bring on my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, Pat Foreman.
Hey, Whisperer. Boy, we both have been busy this morning. It's been just an amazing morning for me as well. How are you doing today? You look pretty good and sound pretty good.
I'm doing pretty good. Up early again, getting lots of stuff done, which is great. Just going down my to-do list and checking things off left and right. I had one of the goats actually kind of burrow up under the fence and got into the chicken pen today. So I had to go out and deal with that. And then, of course, I forgot to close the chicken run. So now I heard something outside my window. And next thing you know, about a dozen chickens are out in the backyard. So I had to get out there and corral them back in there. All the great things of having a little urban homestead there happening today. So had a great friend stop by, and she was picking up her Chicken Whisperer t-shirt and gave her a couple of dozen eggs to boot. And it was great seeing her and chatting with her, lining up some things for this afternoon. But other than that, having a great time. I want to remind everybody at the end of the show today, we are going to have another Chicken at Trivia contest, and we have the prize carried over from yesterday, which will be not 10, not 20, not 30, but 50 egg cartons from eggcartons.com and a 10-pack of labels that say buy fresh, buy local that you can put on those egg cartons. So we've got a chicken trivia question lined up for the end of today's show. And I want to remind everybody as well, very important, we're right smack dab in the middle of our password collection for poultry protection chicken coop contest sponsored by MyPetChicken.com. And how that works, I'll explain it, is that during every single radio show, I guess now we've done it twice, so for the next 18 shows, but for a total of 20 radio shows up until Friday, September 10th, sometime during the show, it could be right after the very first announcements, could be right before we sign off and anywhere in between, I'll be announcing a secret password, and you just have to collect those secret passwords. And then on Friday, September 10th, we'll open the phone lines to a particular caller. Let's just say caller number 50, and if you're caller number 50 and can recite those 20 passwords, then you're going to win this beautiful coop valued at $400 from MyPetChicken.com. So we're right smack dab in the middle of the chicken coop contest. And we had a contest just like this back in, I think it was October, November. And Teresa won a beautiful Horizon Structures chicken coop, and that thing was valued at over $2,000. So that was delivered right to her home. So what a great prize that was. That was a fun contest, especially the day everybody tried to call and be number 50. And then as she got down to reciting those 20, 25 names, she got down to 18, 19, 20. You could hear it in her voice. And what a great time. So we're hoping this contest. You remember, it was great. So we
that was a real cliffhanger. Oh my God, that was the suspense was just you could just feel the tension go. Oh, am I going to mess up on one of the words? Yeah, that was good. That was good. So we're going to do it again.
Doing it again right now. So sometime during today's show, you will hear the secret password announced as well. So write those down and then just be the right caller on the 10th, and you'll have a chance to win this beautiful coupe. Speaking of coupes, I'm looking right at it right now. I've just posted this on our Facebook fan page. I don't know where these people were when we were having our ugliest chicken coop contest a couple of months ago, but this one might have been up there in the rankings. If you go to our Facebook page, just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And I may see if Christina can post the link to our page so people can just click through from the chat room. But this is very clever on their part. I give them an A+ for recycling, but I'm not so sure that I would want this coop in my backyard. But what they've done is they've taken a front load commercial washer. I can't tell if it's a washer or a dryer, but it's a front load commercial washer or dryer. And they basically built a little A-frame roof over it and put a blue tarp over that. And there's their chicken coop. So I give them an A for recycling. I mean, it's pretty neat. They're pretty clever to come up with something like that. But yeah, it's a washing machine with a little bit of a plywood over the top, built like an A-frame, like a roof. And then it's got, of course, a blue tarp. I think that was one thing that was very common in our ugliest chicken coop contest was a blue tarp. It seemed to be kind of the universal tool when coming up with an ugly chicken coop. But this one may have taken the cake if they were around when we were doing this. But take a look at that picture. It is a sight to behold. Again, give them an A for recycling, but not so sure on beauty. And some of the comments are just priceless. We have one person that said, that looks like it would have made a bang-up whiz-bang chicken plucker. We got one that says, where was she when you were having your ugly chicken coop contest? We've got one person was way to repurpose, and I agree. One person put in here, the only problem is it needs to be on the front porch.
That would do it.
Just put it on the front porch. And then says, somebody put, looks like a lot of front porches here in Marietta. And then, a lot of great comments coming in from that. So definitely if you have a chance, go and take a look at that. Just click on the picture to make it a little bit bigger. Mia says, hey, good for them. I like it. And somebody, Kristen, put, looks like it might get awful hot in there. And it may. But they got the door wide open. So they got, it's great. So go take a look at it. Very, 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 very funny.
So if you want to clean the coop, you just plug it in and send it through the wash cycle, huh?
I guess so. When you're getting them ready for the show, absolutely. Just shut the door and put it on a gentle cycle and put a little suds in there. No, we can't advocate that. That wouldn't be good for the birds. But
okay, well, take the birds out and then send it through the wash cycle. That way you can just clean your coop real easily.
Clean your coop. Now, that I like. Absolutely. So that sounds like a winner. Kill two birds with one stone. Ha ha.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, we've got some chickens in the news for you, and it's not just chickens people are having problems with. It also happens to be problematic to have pigeons, apparently. Ruffled feathers in gun barrel. Boulder County questions whether pigeons are pets or poultry. Gun barrel families racing pigeons hang in the balance. This comes to us from Laura Snyder. She's a staff writer here with the ColoradoDaily.com. Jim Williams and his six-year-old daughter have a hobby they love to share together, racing pigeons. Williams works to train the birds, which can fly hundreds of miles on race day, to return to their loft in the family's backyard on Carter Trail in Gun Barrel. Brianna works more on naming the thumb-sized baby birds and on picking out which birds should be bred together, an annual Valentine's Day ritual in the Williams house. I love it. It keeps me and my daughter busy, Williams said Tuesday. She and I have been doing this for years at this very property. On September 1st, the Boulder County Board of Adjustment will wrestle with whether the dozens of racing pigeons Williams owns should be categorized as livestock or pets. The answer will determine whether the father-daughter pair can keep their birds or if the prized pigeons have to be ousted to meet zoning regulations. Now, I've been to Denver. I lived in Boulder. I'm wondering if they're doing anything about the pigeons in the parks and all over the grocery store parking lots and all around the dumpsters and all around under the bridges. I wonder if they're doing anything about the pigeons that are wreaking havoc versus these few pigeons that are being caged. That are, I mean, they used pigeons in World War II for messages. I mean, pigeons helped win World War II. This is kind of a stretch, I think, Pat, but it's just letting you know, folks, that it's not just about backyard poultry. They're coming after our rights, whether it's backyard poultry or backyard pigeons or whatever the case may be. And so I wanted to – this is a different twist on what we've reported here in the past about backyard poultry. And so here they are. They're racing pigeons or keeping them in their backyard. But I wonder if we go downtown how many pigeons we count and what they're doing about those that are actually wreaking havoc. People are feeding them French fries. They're coming around, you know, pooping everywhere all over the park benches. And these being contained, well taken care for, are all of a sudden now a problem. Don't get it. We'll be following the story and let everybody know exactly what happens with this gentleman and her daughter's prized racing pigeons. I mean, what a great educational experience for their daughter. And instead of, you know, it's crazy. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking, Whisper. It's interesting how all of a sudden pigeons are coming into my life. You know, I told you about going to that dinner to my friend's house, and they have this pigeon that just showed up. And he lands on your head, and he's on your shoulder, and he's giving you little pigeon hickeys, and just amazing individual. And then this morning, I went to the Healthy Foods Co-op just to get a cup of coffee after being at the farmer's market. And I'll be darned if a guy that I had known for quite a while didn't join us. And as it turns out, he's literally a pigeon expert. He took them to Saudi Arabia. He knows all about racing pigeons. He knows about how you can do certain look in their eyes and you can see if they're going to be a fast racer or not. I mean, I had a pigeon conversation this morning, and then I come back and check the news, and here's this article about, are pigeons livestock or are they pets? So I agree with you, Whisper, that this is something we really need to put some comments on the Colorado ColoradoDaily.com, because these are not livestock to these people, and they're very quiet. My neighbor has pigeons. It's the same one I was talking with this morning, and he lets them out. They circle around. They're wonderful. I mean, they're quiet. There's no issue at all with the manure. And the other thing we were talking about is he was thinking about starting a business, going to events like funerals or Washington and Lee when they have graduation, and releasing pigeons like they do at Walt Disney at that Disneyland, where they release the palomas, is another word for pigeons, or doves, where they release the doves it's a real emotional thing for me to see these birds flock and be released. So anyway, this is another one we got to go to bat with, Whisper. It's just not right that they should take away a hobby and possibly even, you know, an income stream for birds that are just not a public nuisance or an issue to anyone around them. That's my feeling of it. I just posted on the chat group, there's a wonderful video, an absolutely stunning video. I've watched it twice. It's called The World of Pigeons by Jim Jenner, and it goes into what you were saying about how pigeons were so instrumental in World War I and World War II in getting messages across enemy lines, and they saved thousands of lives. There's even a pigeon in the Smithsonian named G.I. Joe, and he literally was shot down twice. He went something like 10 different missions, and he saved the lives of a lot of soldiers, and they gave him some really high U.S. Medal of Honor. And now he's as the ultimate epitome of honors, he's stuffed in the Smithsonian. So anyway, it's also, the British have done the same thing. They've given their highest awards to carrier pigeons because of their heroic efforts in war efforts. And another thing I bet you didn't know is that Reuters News Service, guess how they started? How do you think they started, Whisper?
Not a clue.
They started with pigeons. That's how he got going, was being able to get to get stock market prices, the closing prices, before the news or the carriers came back in the 1800s, and they made a fortune because of carrier pigeons. So there you go. So what do you think? Should we raise the alarm for folks to get behind this and support pigeons?
I think it's I think this one would be easier in a way to fight than trying to fight for backyard poultry. I mean, just all you have to do is say, did you see how many pigeons were on the front steps of the courthouse walking in here to battle this? I mean, are you doing anything about those? Oh, my gosh, stop the presses. There's a pigeon out in on the front steps of the courthouse. What are you going to do? So I think that would be even more fun in a way to fight than sometimes the backyard chickens. Because, I mean, here we are. They got the Georgia producing more chickens for broilers than any other state in the world. And any other place in the world. So, but yet, in many places, you can't have one in your backyard. It's insane. So, yeah, I think that would be even a little bit more fun and entertaining to say, "Hey, Judge, by the way, did you walk outside? There's a pigeon out there on the front steps of the courthouse. We better quarantine this place and shut down court right now."
Well, it certainly brings the contrast into focus. And yet, how many times have I walked through the piazzas in Italy and in France, the centrals, and the pigeons are there, and I just so enjoy watching them and feeding them and seeing them fly. And I know the poop is an issue, but did you know that, I think it was one of the earlier wars, King George, I think it said, I've got to watch this video again, but the king actually made a proclamation that all the pigeon poo in the country was his, belonged to the crown, because, I mean, you think he's kind of weirdo, right? All that pigeon poo is mine, but pigeon poop can be used to create saltpeter, which is used in gunpowder. So not only could it be a measure of national defense to be able to create local gunpowder, but they're a valuable fertilizer as well. And the fertilizer value of pigeon poo is very well known and documented. So there's more than just right to be able to race a few pigeons. This gets right into the declaration of the right to have our own food sources and certainly hobbies, because they're using this right now as a hobby. And the world of racing pigeons, it's a whole world I didn't even know was there, but it is absolutely huge. The pigeon shows outnumber the ones for chickens when it comes to both the number of birds in the show as well as the number of shows. So it opens the door to a whole huge area that, needs to be preserved. Anyway, that's what I think. So
I agree.
Both agree
100%.
Again.
Yeah, both agree again, absolutely. Well, most of the time we do. So, which is great.
Yeah, except on rototillers.
Rototillers,
and everyone should get an award or a prize.
Right, yeah. I love it.
That's the only place we disagree.
Sure. I've got another one here, no problem. And just want to remind everybody about the massive egg recall. Over 200 million eggs have been recalled. You can get all the information. I'm not going to go through it. We've talked about it a couple of days in a row. It's going all over the place, all over the wire because of an egg farm in Iowa, because of the risk of a salmonella. And somebody posted on the on our Facebook page yesterday, again, more reasons to follow us on Facebook, about, I thought if you cooked eggs, scrambled them, it would kill the salmonella, no problems. And Dr. Bridget McRae sounded off on that, basically said, yeah, but think about all the things that aren't cooked that eggs can be used in, like someone may have cookie dough and they like to eat raw cookie dough, or some different types of ice cream or different types of, maybe they lick the bowl after they make a cake or something and they had eggs. So there's all these different scenarios that that can come out of this. So over 200 million eggs have been recalled due to the salmonella risk. I think there's been several people that have been sickened by this, and they've tracked it back to these eggs. So you can get all that information also at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And then one last one before we continue on, and I love this. First poultry prince and princess to be crowned at the 2010 Minnesota State Fair.
All right.
I love it. First, it says, Golden Plump and Minnesota 4-H offers $1,000 scholarships to Minnesota's top male and female poultry ambassadors. Comes to us from, of course, PR Newswire, Minneapolis, August 18th. says Minnesota 4-H and Golden Plump have teamed up to sponsor the first ever Poultry Prince and Princess contest at the 2010 Minnesota State Fair to recognize and the knowledge, leadership, and skills of Minnesota's youth in the poultry industry. Dozens of male and female teenagers statewide will vie for a chance to reign over the Minnesota Chicken Kingdom. The winners will receive $1,000 scholarships and serve as the state's first poultry ambassadors for 1 year. The contest is open to Minnesota State Fair 4-H participants who have completed ninth grade or higher. The competition will run from August 26th to the 31st and include round one, interview, quiz, showmanship, and poultry barn. The contestant will be tested on their poultry knowledge, presentation and handling of their chickens, and personal appearance. Round two will include the contestants will be scored and timed on their ability to cook two chicken halves and their sanitation practices while prepping and cooking. And round three, the top three female and top three male contestants from rounds one and two will be invited to compete in round three, where they will be asked to answer four category-specific questions with knowledge, confidence, and personality. One question will even require clucking, walking, or dancing like a chicken. So a little bit embarrassing there, but good for them. So how about that? The very first ever Poultry Prince and Princess to be crowned at the 2010 Minnesota State Fair. Minnesota. The Minnesota State Fair. So I'd love to be there. That would be so much fun to see the very first Prince and Princess of Poultry be crowned there. So I wanted to share that with everybody because that sounds like a whole coop full of fun.
Yeah, I hope they have a recording of the clucking competition with the young prince and princess. I mean, if the prince will he crow or will he coo? And of course, the princess is she just a clucker or what? So we'll see. And the walking and dancing, this could be really rich. Whisper. Do the chicken walk. You know, there's Walk Like an Egyptian, the popular song. Maybe there'll be Walk Like a Chicken. Sure. Will come out soon.
Maybe that'll be next. You never know. Want to remind everybody that my personal assistant, Christina, has posted in the chat room, don't forget to vote today for Dr. McRae's project, $250,000 grant studying the use of chickens and composting at their university, at Delaware State University. The link is right there in the chat room. Once you register, it may take you 5 minutes to register the first time, but you can vote once a day, every day, all the way until the end of this month. And we would hope that you would take time to actually do that because it would help help her out, help the school out, help the study out, and it would help all of us backyard chickeneers based on the outcome of that study. So we invite you to do that. Somebody actually in the chat room said there may be a new movie coming out with Kevin Costner called Dances with Chickens. Dances with Chickens, like we were talking, and maybe the prince and the princess at the Minnesota fair will be required to do that dance. So perfect. Let me see if we got. Yeah, Pat must have put herself on mute because I do not hear her anymore. So let's see here, Pat, if you're there, sound off.
Yeah.
Pat Foreman. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, Whisper.
That's okay. Didn't hear you. No problem at all. I think that's we're going to wrap it up for Chickens in the News. But I have a little favor to ask for some folks in the chat room, my regulars. I want you to do me a favor. Yesterday, I had a little bit of an issue with my switchboard. And what I need to – I'm doing a little test here, and so we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, again, today is another great episode of The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. Jane's going to be here after the commercial break talking all about harvesting times, when to harvest those wonderful, wonderful vegetables in our backyard so we can get them at the peak and height of freshness and the peak of to where they're the most nutritious. So we're going to be talking about that today. But I have a little favor to ask for the folks in the live chat room, some of my regular listeners, even if you're not. I had a little issue with my switchboard. So I want as many of you as you can to call our call-in number, if you would. It's 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. If you'll just call that number, maybe you have unlimited minutes on your cell phone or unlimited long distance at your house. If you'll just call during the commercial break, and I'd want to know back in the chat room if you get a busy signal, if you actually get through. If you don't get through, I'm watching the switchboard here. I think they switched up something a little bit on me over at Blog Talk Radio. I emailed them last night to figure out what was going on. So if you'll, during the commercial break, if you will participate in this little study for me, it's always great about live radio. I can see exactly what's going on. If you'll call 347-637-3237 and just let it ring for just maybe about 30 seconds to a minute, and then you can hang back up. I just want to test my switchboard here, and I greatly appreciate it. We sometimes do sound checks and these tests because it is live radio, and I appreciate you folks through the chat room of helping me out. We're going to go to commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll come back and talk with Jane Jensen, The Living Garden, talk about harvesting time. Stay with us, folks.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you very much for calling in. If you called in, of course, you can call in and listen live. If you're on the road, if you're out of the office, you don't have a computer nearby, you can, especially if you have unlimited phone minutes. I'm not sure that at 10 cents a minute that it would warrant calling in to listen to the show because that would rack up your phone bill quite much. But if you have unlimited cell minutes, unlimited home minutes, or just a really great rate and really want to catch an episode, you can listen via the phone. Just call in 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. You can listen to the radio show actually live. When you do call in, you'll just sit there and listen to the show. If you'd like to chime in on something, then just press the number 1, and the switchboard will let me know that you want to talk with our special guest when we have them on. I'm loving this. We've got already about 30 comments at our Facebook page for this great washing machine or dryer chicken coop. And some more comments on here. Somebody put, let's see, Tangela says, "That's great, but does it leave your chickens fluffy and bright?" And let's see, somebody put here, "Doesn't look too bad compared to some of the stuff in my backyard."
She's honest. Oh, dear.
And then we've got, yeah, let's see, we've got, it's not about how things look, but how they work, and I agree with that. And says, "Oh my gosh, looks like it's Fred Sanford's chicken coop." from I love that show. And then we've got, let's see, there's one I wanted to read you that I didn't write this, folks, but somebody else did. Let's see what else we have here. Because I want to see where it goes. Says, and of course, I am not the one who said this. It is posted on my Facebook page, but somebody here put down here, "They must have taken this picture in Arkansas." So, I know. Hey, I didn't write it. Somebody else put it on my Facebook page. I said, "Oh, they must have found this coop driving through Arkansas." So I'm sorry, all my Arkansas fans. We've got a meetup group there in Arkansas, no problem. That's just somebody put in on my Facebook page. So I'm just reading you the facts, ma'am. That's all that I'm doing. So all righty, let's go to the phone lines. Let's start our subject for today, and we're going to welcome on the lovely Jane Jensen, because today is Wednesday, and it's the Living Garden with Jane Jensen. Welcome to the show, Jane. Thanks for coming back.
Hi. You don't know how lovely I am because I've been out picking my beans. So, you know, you have hat hair and everything else. So I have enjoyed listening to your show so far, and I just have to say about the pigeon issue, this song came to my mind. You know, remember in Mary Poppins where they sing, "Feed the birds, tuppence a bag"? Do you remember that? That's what I think about pigeons. They're wonderful. Anyway, back to the subject for today.
Yeah.
How important it is that you harvest your stuff promptly and at the right time, because it makes all the difference between, well, there's quite a difference between old tough beans and green beans that are harvested at their peak of deliciousness. So I don't know if there's any questions yet, but I'll go ahead and start and tell you how important it is that we harvest on time.
Yes.
You know how that sounds good, because I've got a lot of questions about the specific crops. It seems like the deer beat me to most of my fruit. They seem to like it not as ripe as I do. go ahead, Jane. Tell us about beans.
Beans, well, they're just so good when they're small. And if you wait one more day, they're big.
Isn't that the truth of it?
Yeah, and zucchini's the same way. If you wait one day, it's too big.
Same thing
now,
with okra.
Does that mean, an okra, yeah. Does that mean you have to get out there every day? Well, what I do in my garden is I have a every other day policy of harvesting zooks, cukes, and beans. So that would be zucchini or summer squash, cucumbers, and green beans. I harvest them every other day. Without fail. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Then we go over the Sabbath. We don't harvest on Sunday, and then we're at it again on Monday. And that really makes a difference, that I don't have a big quantity of old, icky beans to deal with if I do it that way. So,
but do you can then or sell at farmers markets? What do you do with all the zooks, cukes, and beans?
I have about 6 restaurants that I sell to in the Salt Lake area. But if that aside, if you planted too many, then you got to get some friends to help you use all that produce. But I just can't stress enough. That's one thing I've learned from selling to the restaurants. They don't want it if it's too big. They will not buy it. And yet, if it's just right, they'll pay a pretty penny for it. So really, from the monetary side, in my situation, it's very important that I harvest on time. But if I weren't selling, if I were just growing it for myself, my family, my friends, it's so nice to have top quality produce harvested at the right time. It makes great gifts, and mm-hmm. you know, people love to receive fresh things from the garden. At least many people do. So if you want
it, is there way? There are two questions here for you, Jane. One is there a taste test that you could do for beans? And the other before you pick them, and then there's a question in the chat room. When you're at the farmer's market, is there a way to tell the properly picked beans?
Well, if you're at the farmer's market, and if you ask the farmer, can I taste one of these? They would probably love to let you do that if they have nothing to hide in the way of quality. If they know their beans are picked at the right time, they should taste good, and they should be happy to let you taste just one.
Okay, but is there a way to just look at them? If like, would they snap or certain smell? I mean, if you just want to be expert about it, even in the grocery store.
Yes, I think you want to do the bend trick. The bend test. If they bend, they've either been dried out or I don't know. You don't want beans like that.
If they bend, then they're dried out a little bit. They should snap. Is that what you're saying?
No. They're not worth buying if they bend. You don't want to buy anything like that.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Because they're soft. Usually, you know, snap beans are snappy. They should be snappy and crispy and all of that. All you can do is taste one, and if they're tender inside and solid green inside, if it's a green bean, there are yellow beans too that would be. I mean, you don't want to see white, papery areas inside or spongy or, you know what I mean? That's the sign of beans that are too old.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that's the best with green beans is to test to break one open or taste one and see how they taste. But not everything is like that. You can't really break open a zucchini and taste it. Zucchini is mostly by size. But there are so many varieties of beans and zucchini that, I don't know, I guess you just have to go by how big they are. The zucchini should feel nice and crisp and solid. You can kind of give it a little squeeze, not too much, but just a little squeeze. I think there was a question about corn. How do you tell when corn is ready on the plant?
That was my question.
Every single
year, Jane, it's so aggravating because I want, I'll give it one more day or two more days. I want a little bit bigger ear or, you know, do I wait till the tassels turn brown? I mean, I have no clue. So this year we actually lucked out, and Jen was out there on a daily basis when they were coming nice and ripe. And she got some wonderful corn out of the garden this year.
Oh,
but this is the
good.
First year in many, because we always, I mean, the squirrels end up getting all of it or a lot of it, or we're horrible at wondering when to pick and harvest our corn.
Oh, that is a most aggravating thing, when you peel an ear down and find the kernels are not mature yet. And so you've wasted one. You've let the bugs in to that ear. But here's the way I do it. And, of course, there are many varieties of corn, and so this may not be exact for all the different varieties that people can grow. But for the variety I usually grow is Golden Jubilee. It's a hybrid, but it's an old hybrid. It's been around for 40 years or more. Anyway, first of all, I feel the ear to see if the tip feels full. If I, you know, you can feel, if it feels like it's still too skinny in there, it probably is, but if it feels full, then I peel it down and take a look. But if it feels skinny, I don't peel it down. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with peeling down one or two ears to see how it looks. Another thing that tells me is sometimes the ears begin to hang out farther. Instead of sticking straight up, or they hang down at a greater angle, almost horizontal, not quite, but almost. That tells me, they're starting to get heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is that the silks will dry up. But those things aren't very accurate. and one variety might be a little different from another. So I still think the feel the tip is the best way to tell.
To feel the tip, is that?
Uh-huh.
Could you just kind of peel it back and just taste one little kernel, for see how sweet it is?
Well, it'll be sweet, but if I'm talking about feeling the tip with the husk still in place, where
uh-huh.
you have not peeled anything down, you just can feel the outside of the ear, the outside of the husks. Now, if it feels nice and full, then I would peel down, and you can just tell to look at those kernels if they're formed and if they're bright, if they're yellow, if it's a yellow variety. If,
mm-hmm.
if they're big, if the kernels are big and, you know, look like they're supposed to look. When it's immature, they're just, well, they're tiny and they don't stick up very high. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes sense. Whisper, is that going to help you now with your future corn crops?
I think so, and even then, I'll probably try to be out there as many days as I can when I think it's close to being harvested and checking and looking and tasting and just about anything else. I think it's worth it to be able to do that, to sacrifice a little time and do a little test to make sure your hard work does pay off and it doesn't go to the squirrels.
Yes, and there's another thing you can do. The squirrels and the raccoons are actually a good indicator. I guess we all know that. That the corn is at its best. They know when to go pick your corn. But there is a trick you can do. It's called cayenne pepper. When you think the corn is about ready, start sprinkling cayenne pepper around on the tips of the ears, on the leaves, around the ground, around the perimeter of your corn patch. Because think about this. If you were a raccoon and you got that on your hands, and then got it in your mouth or rubbed your eye or something, you'd be out of there. They will not come back. That's the best way to keep raccoons out of corn that I've ever found.
That'd probably keep neighbors out, too.
Yeah. And, of course, you'll want to wash your hands after you harvest it if you have put cayenne pepper on there. It won't affect the flavor of the corn. It's easy to wash off. But if somebody could figure out a way to mix the cayenne pepper, there's actually something called... what's it called? Hot pepper spray, hot pepper wax, which is a pepper spray. And I haven't tried that, but I'll bet it would work. But you could spray that and then add some cayenne pepper out of the bottle, and then you'd have a double dose if you have a real problem. Try that. Anyway, that might keep the raccoons out for a day or two until you can get your corn picked.
That's a great idea. That's a really good idea. Or maybe a pepper oil. You want to do a pepper-infused oil and just kind of put on the top there. Because that'd really stick to their little lips.
Yeah, we need to find a way to stick that cayenne pepper in the right places where the animals are going to go, where they're going to touch it. Maybe that'll be their last touch. Anyway, I'm at this moment, I'm sorting apricots. I don't know if anybody out there has apricots on or peaches or fruit like that. And
yeah, I've got apricots just coming on, and the deer have gotten the low-hanging fruit so far.
Oh, well, those rats. No, deer.
No, they're deer, please. I don't want rats. So far, no rats in my little place here.
Yeah, well, anyway, I was going to talk for a minute about how important it is to let the fruit ripen on the tree, especially with apricots. Every different kind of fruit, the fruit ripens differently. And with apricots, I have found with my trees, I've got two trees, the top branches ripen first, and usually a whole branch will ripen. And so you can climb up on your big ladder and get that top fruit first. When you start seeing fruit all over the ground, then you know your fruit is getting ripe. But it's not the ones at the bottom that you want to pick. They're not going to be ripe as soon. They'll be ripe maybe in another week or 10 days. But get up and get those top ones picked. They'll taste better. The best way to know if fruit is ripe is to cut it open and taste it. But usually the fruit will start to drop on the ground. So with peaches, let me stay with apricots for a minute. When you go to pick them, if they come off easy, they're probably ripe. Yeah, and they're also starting to drop. That tells you they're coming off easy if they're dropping on the ground.
Yeah, and not all of them will Yeah, not all of them will be easy to pick at the same level at once, I found.
Yeah, that's true. I have found that different limbs for apricots, different limbs ripen kind of at once. Usually it's the ones up in the top, maybe the ones on the sunny side of the tree, which is the
top.
Well,
that makes sense now that you talk about it, Jane. I hadn't really thought of that, but boy, that makes
a lot
of sense.
So many people will... We have people with apricot trees in their yards around here in Utah, and often they don't even use the fruit. Other times, the fruit will start to drop, and they'll go out and pick the lowest limbs because they're the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones on the top are the ones that have the sweetness and tree-ripe flavor, and they just let those continue to drop because they don't make that connection. It's very sad.
Huh.
Very sad.
Well, that is kind of sad. The other thing I found is the one, even though they fall, doesn't mean they're gone or bad. Because if I get out in the early morning, the fallen fruit, it's perfectly fine. It's not even bruised.
Oh.
But it seems like if it stays there for more than a day, then the ants and stuff get into it. So.
My mom's in the bedroom. Yeah. Well, it's really hard to know just how to do it. And you know, with peaches, I don't know how many of you have peach trees.
I do.
Peaches are different. We have a lot of peach trees here, but I know that the South is the peach capital of the world. So I don't know that I can counsel anybody here in Utah about peaches, but here's what I have learned. They ripen differently than apricots. Each peach ripens by itself, so you have to go around. And what I do is I give a little tug if it comes off easy, and it's ripe. Now, there's many varieties of peaches, so I'm only familiar with about four varieties because that's what I have growing in my yard. They start to smell good. They start to drop on the ground, but not necessarily one whole limb will ripen. Usually it's one or two peaches off of each limb. It's just the way they are. So peaches are a different kettle of fish, but they're so good, and they're so much better if they're allowed to ripen on the tree until the point of almost dropping. I guess the ideal thing is if you can go out there and catch them while they drop, but of course that's not very practical. So are there any questions?
Tell me about...
Tell me about
squash, because one thing that we may have a day or two where we get really busy and can't be in the garden, and Jen will go outside, and all of a sudden we'll have this squash. It seems like the size of a baseball bat, you know, like the crooked neck squash or straight. And I've noticed that we can give it to the chickens, we can give it to the goats, but on the occasion we've tried a squash that really got too large, ideally to pick and eat. I cooked it up, sautéed it, and it just had no flavor. It just didn't have the flavor as the smaller, like you were talking about, you know, pick it when it's small and fresh and snaps. I guess the same thing kind of applies to squash, too, because when they got really much bigger, they didn't have the flavor at all of the smaller. And also my issue with okra. Okra, when it starts to grow, it seems like you almost have to go out twice a day, because when it gets up to a certain point, it gets hard as a rock. It's not fit to eat or cook at all.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, with squash, as soon as the fruits start to get beyond about 8 inches long or even 12 inches long, it begins to put its strength into forming seeds. And the sweetness disappears. That's why they don't taste good when they get bigger, because they're starting to form seeds inside. So, and have you ever walked out in the garden and seen a tiny zucchini that's maybe 5 inches long and how it shines? I like to call it sheen. I call it sheen. That's just my own word for it. It's like it says, pick me, I'm delicious. It's the most wonderful thing, and you see it with raspberries or with fruit that's ripe. It glows somehow. Tomatoes, when they're ripe, oh, my gosh, that's what they say to me. Pick me, I'm ripe. So I pick my summer squash every day, Monday through Friday. Then I take Saturday and Sunday off of it, and then by Monday, we have to start again. Right now, we're picking bucketfuls of zucchini, and by Monday, there are some bigger ones, but I don't mind them about 8 to 10 inches long. That's a good size. And if you keep them picked, the plants will continue to bear until frost. There's something called plant psychology. And when you pick, has anybody ever heard of that school of...
Plant psychology?
Plant psychology, yes. And one part of it is this. A plant, if you keep picking its, like beans, for instance, if you keep picking those beans, you're signaling to the plant, hey, you better make more flowers and grow more beans. You've lost these other ones here. Keep producing. That's the plant psychology. Because the plant, you know, that's just what it does. Now, if you leave beans on the bean plant too long and they start to get old, you'll notice that the plant will stop flowering and producing new pods. It's just because the plant says, all right, we've got a good bunch of progeny here. We don't have to make more flowers. Let's put our energy into ripening the beans that we have. Sounds pretty sensible to me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
That's how beans are, and zucchini is that way too.
Now, Jane, I have a question for you. When the beans are getting larger, and do you save your bean seeds too, and do you mark certain beans that you want to be able to grow again next year?
Well, you could, but with seed saving, I don't remember if we talked about this that day we talked about seed saving, but I can talk about it now. I have a row, a 40-foot row. I've actually got 3 40-foot rows of pole beans. And
wow.
They're all intertwined.
I know.
I picked them last night with a headlamp. It was great. The crickets were right there in my ears, and it was so fun and beautiful, half moon shining. It was a wonderful experience. But
a moonlit bean patch. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I love my bean patch. They're so fun. But anyway, if you want to save seeds for your beans, the best thing to do is plant your, this is for pole beans, plant your pole beans, plant 3 plants in a different location individually and give them their own pole to climb on. Because if you're going to save seeds, you need to know which plant it came from. You need to know, when you're going to save seeds for beans, you need to check, are the leaves the right shape? Are the flowers the right color? Is the bean the right shape? Does the bean taste like it's supposed to taste? Is it early like it's supposed to be? Or does it come on when all the others come on? Is it the right earliness? And is the seed the right color and shape? All of those characteristics. Also, is it disease resistant like all the others?
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to tell that if your beans are all in a row and they're all mixed up one with another? So what I do is I stick 3 poles in the ground, all just like a piece of rebar or something, in 3 different locations. I have one here and one over there. And then I just let one bean plant grow up that pole. And then I can see, all right, I know exactly what that bean looks like because it's all by itself there on that pole. Then I can check for all those characteristics that I'm going to select for. If it checks out, then that's great. Then I will pick the pods off that plant. I won't eat them. I might taste one or two to make sure they taste good. But the rest of them I'll let mature on that plant, and then that will be my crop of bean seeds.
Okay. Well, that's a good practice.
Well,
wow.
That way you know exactly what you've got.
Uh-huh.
If you just save seeds from your row, you could do that rather than have none. But I think a more, not necessarily scientific, but a more precise way to do it is to grow the plant by itself somewhere so that you can see exactly what characteristics it has. And then if they're the right ones, you're in luck. And you can get like a pint of bean seeds off of one, no, maybe just a cup, a whole cup of bean seeds off of one single plant.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. But Jane, I have a question personally, and I love cantaloupe. I absolutely love cantaloupe, and I haven't been able to really figure out how to find the best ones at the store. I mean, I've even grown them, and so do you have any? Sometimes the end is soft. Sometimes it's a smell. Of course, often in the store they're picked green. But do you have any tips on how to get the ripe cantaloupes or the best ones in the store or at the farmer's
market? My uncle always says you have to smell their butts. And so it's so funny. Yep, it's so funny because he tells my little nephews and nieces that, just, you know how to check if the cantaloupe's right? And they'll, they may be five or six. Yeah, you smell its butt. And so so it's just kind of a family joke that, he always says you got to smell the cantaloupe's butt to see if it's ripe or not. And so you go through the store and you're smelling. Now, I was told a long time ago that the trick if you're gardening yourself is that they will actually, because we pick some green cantaloupes in our day, you just let them detach. That they'll naturally detach from the vine when they're ready to actually eat and they're the ripest, or sometimes when you just go to turn them and they'll detach by themselves. I was taught that that's when they're the ripest. But in the stores, that's what Jen and we go walk through the store and we smell the butts of the cantaloupe. That's how we tell a lot of times. What say
right.
you, Jane?
what do you do if there's no smell or if your schnoz is stopped up?
Sometimes, yeah. The other word for the bud of the cantaloupe is the blossom end. Anyway, that's a great. That is a great way. And sometimes in the store they have been, and they won't put out their smell quite as well. But if they don't have any aroma, don't buy them. They won't taste good. If they don't smell good, they won't taste very good. So that's my main way. And out in your garden, they do slip from the vine when they're ripe. Most varieties.
Yeah.
I think cassavas don't. And now with a cassava or a honeydew, when you plant melons, the description of the variety should tell you whether they slip from the vine when ripe or whether they don't. And if they don't, if they're the type of melon that doesn't, there's so many types of melons, if they don't, then they have to feel velvety or tacky or, I don't know, like deer antlers in velvet might feel.
Mm-hmm.
They're not smooth and shiny. And in the store, when you have those type of melons, if they're not velvety feeling, don't buy them. Mm-hmm. I really pass up 90% of the melons I see in the stores because of those, because I know they just aren't going to taste good, and you just wasted your money.
Yeah.
That's why we grow them, right?
Yeah, really. I adore cantaloupes. I can make a meal out of half a cantaloupe. My neighbor used to buy cantaloupes at the farmer's market, and then he would put them in the sun or out on the picnic table, and he said that let them ripen up and they were sweeter. And I must admit, I haven't tried that. Is that a technique that you've tried?
I don't think I would try that. In fact, if they're ripe on the vine, I would put them straight in the fridge. But maybe if they're not quite ripe enough, I don't know. I don't think they really ripen off the vine. They might soften a little bit, which, I don't know. I'm not. That doesn't sound like a real good idea to me.
Kind of the same with peaches. Rather than if you're going to be traveling or whatever, I've picked them not quite ripe off the tree and then just kept them inside, sort of like tomatoes, to let them ripen. They don't seem to be quite as good, but they're not bad.
Yeah, I think with peaches and with apricots, I've found if you pick some and you got a few of them that are a little bit greener than you like, you can just let them sit out at room temperature for a day. And they do soften, and they do sweeten just a little. And maybe cantaloupes will. I don't know. But I don't like to put any produce out in the hot sun when it's just been picked.
Mm-hmm.
Because once it's off the vine, the sun is not its friend anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I just would be leery of that. But you could try it. Try it and test that for yourself. And if he's done it and he's tried it, And maybe, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to get it soft because he didn't have many teeth left. So it might have been a texture rather than a taste kind of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
One thing about tomatoes. Go ahead.
I was just going to leave it about tomatoes. I have been always told that, for example, if you go ahead and say, you know, I'm going to get these before the worms get them or the bugs get them, they're not quite ripe, that you can sit the apples on the counter, apples with the tomatoes, and the apples will actually release an ethylene gas that will help turn your tomatoes red. In fact, I know a lot of tomatoes nationwide, they're picked green because they're a little bit more hardy and a little more hard. They'll run through a machine that sprays them with ethylene gas, and then they kind of ripen on the trucks wherever they're being shipped to. But apples release an ethylene gas. So whether they're in the fridge or on the counter, sit some apples around them, they'll release that ethylene gas, and it does help the tomatoes turn red a little bit faster. It's something I was actually taught back in college when I was studying horticulture. But what were you going to say about tomatoes, Jane?
Well, you're right about that ethylene gas. And as far as out in your garden, I always water after I pick my tomatoes, not before. Because when you water, the tomatoes will tend to split. So always water after you pick. And then, of course, maybe you guys don't have sprinklers. We have to water everything here or it dies. So everything is irrigated here.
I've noticed that too, even by no control of my own. We may have not a lot of rain, or next thing you know, we'll just have this huge downpour, and it seems like the tomatoes get this huge, fast burst of growth, and they mm-hmm. do split from the top around towards the sides, and so I can't stand it when that happens.
Yeah, so here's the trick, is to know when is it going to rain, and get out there and pick them just before it rains. But that's not always possible, I realize that. We do get rain once in a while out here, and it's tricky. But, those little cherry tomatoes that have split, you go ahead and pick them and use them. They are so good. That means they are just, I really think their flavor is at their peak when they just barely split. Not that you want that. I try to get them, you know, just before they split, but I don't always make it, so we eat a lot of splits. But they're so good. And you can slice them in half and dehydrate them. And, oh, what a treat that is.
Mm-hmm.
So
I love the cherry tomatoes. Love them.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have any other questions about different kinds of produce picked in a timely manner? You know, one thing I should say, and that is you have to pick your fruits and vegetables at the fruits and vegetables convenience, not your own. You just have to give it that time, like you said. You have to be willing to do it when it's not necessarily convenient for you, if you want it at its best. So
yeah, there you have it. You see, all produce is narcissistic. I mean, it's really not about you. So don't take it personally. It's about their needs and not your needs. So,
yeah.
So just shape up. Yeah.
Then they're out there to fulfill your need for good food.
That's
so really, if you harvest your stuff late, you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, that's right. And they don't care.
Right.
Oh,
so is there any specific crops anybody wants to talk about?
I just posted in the chat room to see if we had any questions, and I was heading over to the switchboard. If you have any questions, we have about 7 minutes left with Jane Jensen. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the right time to harvest your backyard garden plants, 347-637-3237. If you have any specific questions for Jane, or you can put them in a chat room in all caps so Pat, Christina, or I myself will see, and we can ask Jane your questions. So go ahead, ladies. I interrupted you there.
Well, I just had one quick question because I was just pondering it before the show, Jane, so I'm glad this is on. I've got some giant zucchini out there. I mean, these guys have really been on testosterone. They're huge, and they're really long. Now, can I save those seeds? Because you got me into seed saving even more than I was before. And if so, what's the best way to save them? Or should I just, what should I do if I wanted to save those zucchini seeds?
Well, you can't really save those seeds because they've been all crossed up already. The only way
crossed
to
up
save,
the,
wash,
the, I've only got four plants.
Well, still, the bees that go into those flowers have visited every other garden in a half-mile radius, maybe farther. They just really fly around, and they'll cross your zucchini with anybody else's varieties of zucchini. Now, if you had four plants of the same variety and there was nobody for miles around, then you could. But if you have any other squash, I don't think they cross with melons or cucumbers, but if anybody has winter squash or any other kind of squash around, they will be crossed.
Really? They cross. So I'll get a squash crossed with a okra?
Uh-huh.
Or am I talking about...
not with okra. No, but with winter squash. See, the only difference between summer squash or zucchini and all those kinds of winter squash is the harvest time. We really shouldn't call it zucchini. We should call it summer squash, because what that means is you're harvesting it when it's tiny and tender. Any kind of winter squash, you could harvest at that stage. Some taste better than others, and some grow really fast at first, and some grow slower. And so they have selected the varieties that we call zucchini or summer squash because they taste best at that stage of tiny, you know, 4 inches long.
Okay. And, Jane, I'm sorry. If I said zucchini, I meant to say okra.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I think I did say
zucchini, but I meant to say okra. I've got some that I'd like to just raise next year. Do they cross with... Do I need to worry about pollination with them?
You know,
they do have flowers.
I'm growing okra for the first time in my life.
Me too.
I don't know that much about okra. So maybe you can get online and find that out, or get that book Seed to Seed by Suzanne Ashworth.
I have that book.
You do? Well, she'll tell you about okra.
Yes, wonderful book.
Yeah.
I think I'm the only one around that's growing okra. It doesn't seem to be that popular here in Rockbridge County.
Well, maybe you could. Yeah, maybe you could save the seeds. See what she says in that book about it, whether you have to have a large population of plants for genetic diversity, or whether you can just have a few. It just depends on the plant and on the flower structure. Yeah. But back to squash... You have to hand-pollinate squash, and I have to tell you about this. I have had so much fun the last couple of weeks hand-pollinating. We're trying it for the first time to hand-pollinate our own squash. You have to start with a non-hybrid. You'd have to start with an open-pollinated variety of squash, and according to Suzanne Ashworth's book, you have to have 18 plants of one variety. That's a lot of squash. So we tried to do that. We've got six hills, and there's three plants in each hill. Now the idea is to get one fruit on each of those 18 plants of that variety. And you have to go, you know that squash has male and female flowers on the same plant?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, that's kind of fun. So what you do is, in the evening, you go out there, and I made these little cloth bonnets. They're about 10 inches in diameter. It's just a thin piece of nylon tricot, just very thin. And I went around the outside edge with some string in and out so that I could gather it up and put it around my squash flowers and draw the drawstring around to keep the bees out. So in the evening, I would go out and find a female flower that looked like it was going to open the next morning. And with a little practice, you can get so you can tell which ones are going to open the next morning. So I'd find a female flower, and then I'd find a male flower close by on the same plant, or at least in the same 18 plants that are the same variety, you know, that of that group. And I would put a bonnet on those two. And then the next morning, I'd come out just after sunup, and I would pick the male flower, rip off the pretty yellow part. Actually, half the time I ate it, they're delicious. And so then you have the stamen left from that male flower. Then we'd open up the female flower and dab the pollen around into the center of the female flower. What do they call that, the pistil?
Mm-hmm.
The top of the ovary. Anyway, whatever it's called. And then we close up that flower and put the bonnet back on. So we want to keep the bees out. We can't let any bees in there because they have visited who knows where and have crossed everything up already. So here's this flower, this female flower that you have hand-pollinated. You've put the little bonnet back on and drawn the drawstring around the bottom so that no bees can get to it. And then I would take a piece of red ribbon or something and tie around that stem of that little tiny squash that's on the bottom of that female flower. That marks the one that I hand-pollinated. That ribbon I'll leave on there for the whole season so I can tell which ones I hand-pollinated and which ones I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, after...
Well, that's
after
dedication
one day,
there, Jane.
Well, it's fun. It really didn't take that much time. Anyway, so after a day, just one day, the flower is already wilted and curled up, you know. Then you can go take the bonnet off, and you leave the red ribbon around it. And that's all there is to it. And now, as the days have gone by, for these last two or three weeks, I've gone out there, and I can see the fruits are growing with my little red ribbons around them. And, oh, it's so exciting. That is a
cute.
Fun adventure.
Cute. A little squash growing with red ribbons. That is so sweet.
Well, yeah, it's fun. It is really fun. I'm excited about this. And I'm just learning right along with everybody else. And we just try stuff.
Gosh.
And
just we never learn it all, do we? It's just not possible to learn it all.
But that's what makes the next day worth living.
That's right. I agree with you.
Well, Jane, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been great today. If you're just joining us, you can listen to the archive of today's show. Just go to iTunes.com, podcast.com, Zoom.com, or, of course, blogtalkradio.com. Listen to the podcast of the show. If you missed it, we were talking all about when is the proper time to harvest your backyard vegetables so they taste the best and they are the most nutritious. And so we'll be back in a couple of weeks again with The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. Jane, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure. Always learn so much stuff when you're on the radio show with us. So thank you very much for joining us. We hope you have a great week or two, and we'll see you back here in a couple of weeks, Jane.
Thank you very much, and everybody have fun.
Bye-bye. You too, Jane. That was wonderful. Thanks for sharing all your expertise and advice.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. I want to make sure that, Matt, Pat, you're still on. We're going to go to a short commercial break, but not before I go ahead and start the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer EggCartons.com trivia contest today. One lucky winner is going to win not 10, not 20, not 30, but 50 awesome egg cartons, paper egg cartons, recyclable paper egg cartons from eggcartons.com. So you'll win 50 egg cartons and a 10-pack of labels that say buy fresh, buy local for your egg cartons. Everybody who's got backyard chickens need egg cartons. Don't just put your old beautiful eggs in any old used grocery store carton. You need some really nice cartons to show off your beautiful eggs. One lucky winner today is going to walk away with just that. Let me give you the number. It never changes. Call in for the contest, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. We're going to take caller number 8. We'll take caller number 8 today. If you can tell Pat and I, if you can tell us the answer to the following question. The Buckeye breed is the only known American breed to be developed by a woman. We do know that. What is her name? The Buckeye breed is the only known American breed to be developed by a woman. That we know. But what is her name? If you know the answer to this question, caller number 8, 347-637-3237. Give us a call right now, and you'll win 50 egg cartons from eggcartons.com and a 10-pack of labels, buy fresh, buy local. So dial the number if you know. We'll be back right after this short break. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product,
you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off.
The Clapper.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at mcmurrayhatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today. What a great show, learning all about when to harvest our great fruits and vegetables in our backyard with Jane Jensen and her show on the first and third Wednesdays of every month, The Living Garden. So tune in tomorrow. Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, poultry scientist, professor, and small flock specialist. How about that? She's going to be joining us tomorrow talking all about small flock management. That'll be tomorrow, and then Friday, it'll be another great episode of Fun Friday. We'll be giving away some great prizes from our sponsors. That's what we're doing on Friday. And then let's see what we got in store for next week. Next Monday, we've got the, let's see who we've got coming on. The American Poultry Association on Monday. We'll have SPPA on Tuesday, Christine Heinrich, talking about Jungle File with Thomas Condon. We've got Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. We'll be talking about Salmonella pylorum. And let's see, we'll be have Thursday, Richard Frudenberger talking about coyotes. And then a special episode Friday the 27th, PR manager with ManaPro. Of course, you know, they're our big show partner now and big sponsor and supporter of the show. They'll be on talking about all their products and events that we'll have going on this coming year and next year into Chick Days. So Jennifer Honacki will be joining us on Friday, a full show for you all next week. So let me go ahead and get to the phone lines here and get this number down so we can give them a call here. And, of course, Pat, I want to appreciate you being on with us today. I learned a lot from Jane, always do.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's never ending. Either my memory is giving out, which is possible, but there's also so much to learn every time, and especially about growing our own food and being able to have that nutritious food. So Jane really had a lot of good ideas today and a good helpful hints. Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. She did. It's great. Okay, we're going to go now. We've got caller number 8 on the line. All righty. Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Your caller number 8, calling in from area code 336. Area code 336. If you will state your name and what state you're calling from, please.
Jason, North Carolina.
Hey, Jason.
North Carolina. And, of course, I'll repeat the question. We do know that the Buckeye breed is the only known American breed to be developed by a woman. What was this young lady's name?
Nettie Metcalf.
That is correct. It was Nettie Metcalf. And the Buckeye, what a great breed. I know a lot of people have them. They're becoming more and more popular nowadays. You see them at the shows across the country. You got a Buckeye or two, don't you, Pat?
Yes, I've had several Buckeyes in my flock throughout the year, but I've got one hen that I've got at the Lucasville show. She's quite independent, and I just call her Bucket, which she seems to respond to. So, but she's a good layer.
Yeah.
She's personable, and she's independent. It's my kind of gal.
Is she going to end up being a bucket of extra crispy or original recipe?
Oh, that is so bad. No, she's a bucket of joy, Whisper. She's a bucket of joy.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Jason, what kind of breeds do you have, my friend?
Let's see. I have Buff Orpingtons, Black Australorps, Partridge Rocks, Bard Rocks, Americanas. Long list. I run a hatchery.
Oh,
very good. Hey, did you just happen to join us up on Facebook a couple of days ago?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I remember you had posted on.
Yeah, what's your hatchery's name, Jason?
Sigmund Hatchery.
Sigmond Hatchery?
Leave the D off.
Sigmund, and you're in North Carolina, huh?
Yes, ma'am, Rockingham County.
Okay, nice, very good.
We're still kind of small, but I'm working to get bigger. There's no hatcheries really in this area, so I hope to corner the market.
Yeah. I think having a local hatchery is a true service. Of course, we love our big hatcheries too, Murray McMurray and Ideal Poultry and all of it. But sometimes to have local chicks is quite an advantage.
There can be,
yeah,
absolutely. Go ahead, Jason.
I probably sold over probably about 3,000 chicks this year, and this is really my second year that I've done it, you know, seriously.
Uh-huh.
And I also hatch guineas. I've sold a lot of guineas this year.
Very good.
Guineas.
Hey, that's great. Well, we appreciate you listening today, and as always, following us on Facebook. We appreciate your call. Congratulations. You won 50 egg cartons, which sounds like they may come in handy, and some labels that say buy local, buy fresh. So from eggcartons.com. So, Jason, I'll be giving you a call right after the show today, and I'll be getting all of your shipping information. Well, that's about all the time we have today, folks. I want to say thank you very much for tuning in today. We look forward to having you tune in tomorrow. Join us in the chat room tomorrow as well. Dr. Bridget McRae will be here. You'll be able to ask her all kinds of great questions. Don't forget to vote for Dr. Bridget McRae's possible grant, $250,000, studying chickens and composting there at Delaware State University. And I believe that was posted in our chat room a little earlier. If not, we post it on our Facebook page quite frequently. So, Pat, thank you very much for joining us, too. Want to thank Jane Jensen with the Living Garden for all that great information. And we'll see you tomorrow at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Pat?
Okay. What a really interesting show. I learned so much from every show. Well, anyway, thanks again to all our sponsors for their support. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. And, of course, Jane Jensen of Living Gardens, thanks for the tips, tricks, and traps of knowing when to harvest produce. And, of course, congratulations to Jason of Sigmund Hatchery for winning the trivia question today. And, of course, Andy, you're always in our hearts and minds. Thanks for bringing us all together and for doing, kisses back at you, and for doing what we do for the chicken movement. Thanks to the chat room chicken ears and other listeners and iPodders for clucking along. And, of course, blessings and thank you, God, Blog Talk Radio, for providing the radio chat and video services. Thank you all. God bless you all, and may the flock be with you.